First of all, thanks, Arv. Quite a challenge. This is like you get into these 10 aspects of the paramis. I mean, it could be a year-long thing and try to cover this territory in this amount of time is a bit of a challenge. I first got interested in the paramis from reading a book called The Paramis by Ajahn Sucitto, who is a Buddhist monk in the Thai forest tradition. And he introduces it, the paramis, in a way that the paramis are resources, characteristics of that we have that can help navigate life, that can help navigate the challenges of life. He refers to it as floods. And these floods of essentially suffering, and they come in different forms. There's the floods of sensory enticement that we get bowled over by wanting this and wanting that. There's the floods of views and opinions, and you turn on the evening news and we're overwhelmed and that, oh my God, get agitated about this. There's floods of confusion about well, there's floods around identity of self, of a way we try to make ourselves look good or not look good or fear how we're going to come across and all these notions and mental things that go on in our mind around identity. All these are challenges, and the paramis are kind of like tools in order that to relate to these different challenges. And like Arv said, there's 10 of them that he saw listed there. And as I was preparing the talk tonight, it was like these tools are like these resources, almost like the Swiss Army knife of the Dharma path. Things that we can refer to, things that we could call up, things that we can help us navigate the difficulties in life. So they're resources that we have. They're also resources that get honed and get perfected. And that's why they're called perfections as well. With practice, they get perfected. Of these, the paramis, I think about, and in Ajahn Sucitto, everybody has their own angle at this, I believe. But, he talks about generosity and virtue as kind of the foundational aspects of this. It's how all the other ones are framed. Generosity and virtue. This attitude towards others, attitudes of giving, attitude of relationship, attitude of this kindness towards others, of the precepts. Following the precepts like Arv listed. Start with that. All the others fall in place. So we can imagine without that foundation, without the foundation of generosity and virtue, the paramis, I'm going to be, you would have the paramis of resolve. Resolve would be, you could resolve to be greedy. You could be patient in an acquiring. Fame and fortune. You could use discernment to consider what's in my best interest, what's in it for me. We could put all our energy into personal gain. And truthfulness would be irrelevant. So the framing with the foundation of virtue and generosity changes everything. So I'm going to begin with resolve. I think there's, people can go different orders of this. I decide I'm to start with resolve. This is, the Nike slogan, just do it. This is the thing that I'm going to resolve to do this. This is what I'm going to do. Resolve to do or resolve not to do. And in a way, that's what the precepts are about. That's a certain resolve. You resolve not to kill, you resolve not to steal, and so forth. So the consideration is, resolve to do what? What's worth resolving? What's worth, being resolved about? And this is where we come into, the four noble truths, an eightfold path, and right view, and right intention. So the resolve is, acting for my welfare, the welfare of others, and leading to peace. This framing is important. Things flow from our intentions. And our intentions move, and so the resolve moves our intention into action. It's a resolve to travel on the path to awakening. And I think, so there's a movement that's aligned with wise view and intention, but rather than an ideal and a personal ambition, rather than organizing around our sense of self and gain, which would just feed the inner tyrant in us of things that we needed to do, resolve framed around caring for others changes everything. It's liberating, or a liberating resolve rather than being oppressive. Resolve can be supported in different ways. It's helpful when I consider what I resolve to have something that's attainable. Yeah, I like the ideal would be, oh, I'm going to meditate for an hour a day, morning and evening, you know, from here on out. It's helpful to have a realistic, to be realistic about what we are able to do. So that's a consideration. So a resolve in terms of mindfulness practice might be, I'm going to resolve this week to sit 5 minutes every day. Consider what's possible knowing yourself. It, in terms of resolve, it's helpful to have clear boundaries to say, this is what I do. So it doesn't result, there doesn't have to be a lot of consideration about it. Resolve of saying, I don't kill. I don't kill. That's my resolve. Never has to be, have that internal debate. Should I or shouldn't I? No. This is what I do. So it's a support rather than an oppressor. Resolve can be supported by involving others. Imagine a commitment to others. You're doing it for others. A generosity that Arif was talking about. A committed marriage. I'm willing to work a difficult job for the benefit of my family. I'm willing to take care of, be committed to taking care of my ailing mother out of the caring and compassion. So connecting with others is often a support for resolve. The next part I want to talk about is energy. And this is, there's the Pali word for that is virya, and I kind of like that word better in this particular case. It kind of captures it a little bit more. Energy can be a little bit too all-encompassing. So I'll use them both, but I've heard Christina Feldman, another longtime teacher, describe this virya energy as heroism. It's an unshakability of commitment. It's a persistence. It's after the resolve is happening, there's a willingness to continue on. The willingness to step out of our comfort zone. Willingness and to embrace fears. A willingness to go against natural inclinations. It requires energy. So the energy that's implied by virya is the energy that allows us to engage in this practice, to follow a path that's aligned with the values and intentions, again. But it's not just an issue of energy. You know, we have plenty of energy for things like desire and anger. Rather, it has to do with applying the energy in the right place. I've mentioned mindfulness. Mindfulness comes into play here. I'll be talking about discernment. That comes into play here. What is the right place at this time? So it's not, virya is not striving for a goal similar to with the resolve, but rather the effort in following the path. You can ask the question, what is the energy in service of? And when energy is applied in the right place, it doesn't, when this effort is applied in the right place, it doesn't require much energy. There's more energy needed if there's resentment or resistance. So rather than struggling with the resistance, we can be mindfully curious and interested about the resistance itself. See that little difference? Energy applied, struggling against resistance rather than energy applied with mindfulness and being interested. Different things use energy not very well. The hindrances, wanting, sloth, torpor, all those things are energy sappers. Whereas on the other hand, you have the Brahma Viharas. You have the heart practices. You have practices of kindness and generosity, which are uplifting, which are engaging, which are energy inducing and supporting. The next parami I want to bring up is truthfulness. And there's going to talk about two types. Ajahn Suchito, in that same book I mentioned, he's, and this is a Buddha's line. Pretty sure it's Buddhist. Buddha from Buddha. Someone who lies is capable of doing anything. Someone who lies is capable of doing anything. So truthfulness is a big deal. So there's two types of truthfulness I'll talk about. One is truthfulness as a virtue. That is to tell the truth, kind of as an aspect of right speech. Whether to say something, how to say something, when's the right time. And also consider truthfulness is, how do we kind of shade the truth? Well, you know, little exaggerations, using words like always and never. They're always that way. They're never that way. I'm always, you know, truthfulness can kind of, it can be a little bit of a slippery, clever. It can be a little clever culprit or whatever. But, you know, we can't always get it right. Can't do it perfectly. And sometimes when we don't do it right, it's important to consider the impact and the effect of what we say. So it's not only truthfulness, but recognizing the effects of the truthfulness. The second type of truthfulness I want to talk about is truthfulness in regard to ourselves. To be honest, as we acknowledge our conditioning and biases and blind spots. We all have our own blind spots. We all don't see things clearly. We all have distortions. And the truthfulness here is seeing that and acknowledging it. Yeah, I consider this one, this truthfulness here. I'm a white, middle-class white guy raised in the Midwest. I have all these biases. I have all these attitudes. I can go through my life in the delusion of my privilege, or I can be truthful in saying, I'm riding the wave of white supremacy, and a lot of what my fortune is has to do with racism and others supporting an economic and social system that I've been the beneficiary of. It's helpful to recognize, truthful to ourselves, and this is where truthfulness is not always often easy and takes a courage to look that way. Same thing with climate change. Driving gas guzzling cars, all the waste, a willingness to look at that. Can I be truthful in that regard? Next one I want to talk about is patience. And patience has to do with our relationship to present circumstances. And it has to do with, can I be here? What is my attitude towards current circumstances? Impatience is, this shouldn't be. I want it different. Patience is, it's like this now, and I can be with it. With this parami, we can start realizing that there's suffering, that we can realize that the suffering that we might be experiencing when we're impatient isn't coming from the conditions, but rather the suffering is coming from our response to the conditions. Mindfulness, again, as Arv was bringing up, is an important player here. Think about the impatience when we're in a car, in a traffic. I don't want to be here. I want to be somewhere else. There's all kinds of struggle that goes with that. There's suffering that goes with that. We can recognize the suffering that goes with that. Being mindful of the impatience, we can also see the value of patience. And so the question is, what's the process of getting from patience, from impatience to patience? I mean, you can look patient by standing real still and just kind of wiggling inside and struggling inside. That's not patience. Patience is actually settling in and being with. So the first process, in terms of the process of moving from impatience to patience, is recognize and acknowledge the impatience. Wow, patience is happening now. Don't have to identify it. Don't have to scold ourselves about it. And we can feel it in our body. We can recognize the energy of that. We can turn towards that. We can have kindness about it. And there can be a relaxing on the edges of that experience, little by little. And then it's a coming around to, it's a coming around to the letting go, releasing, and then being with. Patience is helpful in conversation when we're talking to each other. Patience in when we're speaking, to not try to get all our ideas jammed into the gathering. At the same time, patience can be practiced in regard to listening, being present, hearing. And that's so that there we come around to the generosity that Arv referred to. The generosity around speaking and listening, sharing, and also both by hearing and listening. And then the fifth one that I'm going to be talking about is discernment. Different terms for this. Wisdom. This is the wisdom component. This innate, an innate clarity. The Pali word for this is panya. So this discernment, this knowing, the wisdom, it's not, we all discern, but it's not the discernment like an intellectual analysis based on reason, of weighing an option, of figuring out. It's not that type of thing. Rather, discernment here is a tapping into this innate quality of knowing. It's the quality of our heart mind, not our rational mind. And it's grounded and important, again, like the others, it's grounded and informed by wise view and intention. We're discerning in regard to wise view, wise intention. It's recognized in the body. It's in the heart. This discernment is not distorted by the hindrances. It's a clear seeing. So discernment is going to be, because of this is an important one, as we act and move through the world, it acts, it recognizes and informs our thoughts, speech, and actions, and whether we're aligned with wise view or attention or not. It includes curiosity and interest quality, a willing to look at, asking questions like, what is this? Can we do that in meditation? How is this? What's needed here? What's needed here? Maybe patience, maybe kindness. Yeah, maybe resolve. So this discernment helps us navigate that. So I'm going to conclude here kind of with a summary of this. I took, all these kind of work together. They're not standalones. And I've been on a couple of retreats. It's a month-long retreat back at the Forest Refuge near the IMS. And it was on a work retreat. And I had different jobs at this work retreat. And one job I had that I had to do regularly over the course of the month was mopping the dining room floor. I have a problem with my own dining room floor, mopping dining room floor. This floor is about 1,000 square feet, lots of tables, lots of chairs, and it's daunting. It is, I have aversion. And yet I have a resolve. I'm going to do this. I'm going to mop this floor. The resolve was there. But it's a resolve that's pushing through aversion. And I got the job done doing that. I get a lot of work done by getting past and getting beyond, not being present. Afterwards, I'm tired. Glad I'm done with that. And maybe on to the next. Well, I'm on a meditation retreat. You know, I start becoming a little, more mindful. And I approach the same job with mindfulness. And now, rather than the impatience where I'm trying to get it done with, it becomes a service, generosity. It becomes something I do with patience. I'm here. I'm with it. I'm paying attention. I'm moving that. I'm feeling the sponge mop. I'm moving the chairs mindfully. Again, it's for service. And I do the same job in, I would say, I don't know, I wasn't tracking time. I'd say in about the same amount of time, I used energy, a lot less energy when there's patience. I use discernment and say, well, when I'm impatient, there's suffering. When I'm patient, there's no suffering. And I was honest with myself that, I was impatient and now patient. So afterwards, I would not dash out of that dining room when the job was done. I would turn back and there would be appreciation. I said, dang, that's all right. Whole different experience when the set of paramis were in play. So the paramis, a handy Swiss Army knife to carry onto our paths to awakening. Yeah. I'll let it go with that. Thank you for your attention.